true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
There.
Okay, now we're going to hear this annoying sound of the metro, which is our fancy blinds going down.
Okay, let's hear it. Wait,
do you hear it? Can you hear that?
No, not on Zoom, but you might be able to hear it on the recording.
As they come down, and it's gentle, but just annoying enough to be terrible.
Nice. Excellent. Good morning.
Good morning.
Catherine Rubin.
Tis I. It's me.
It is you.
Hi.
Nobody calls you Catherine.
My mother, when she was angry, used to.
Oh, great. Sorry.
No, you know what would be cool is to reclaim that.
Catherine Rubin.
You know what I mean? Like Catherine Rubin. But like, what if I said it with love? She doesn't get to own that name just because she was cunty about it. It's all right.
Catherine Cunty Rubin.
That kind of works, doesn't it? Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin.
This is a vocal warm-up. Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin. Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin. Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin. You know you need unique New York.
Red leather, yellow leather, good blood, bad blood.
Catherine Katie.
Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin. I want Rubin to have more T's and K's in it. Rubtikin.
Krubin. Cruella.
Rubtikin.
Katrubkitkin. We're in rare form today. Yeah. Fire it up. Pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew. Can we please play one improv game today and make the people happy? That's what they're asking for. They're at home now, pounding their fists on their desks. When are they going to do more improv?
Who are these mysterious they? I want to know. That one friend who keeps talking to you about it.
No, Leslie, my assistant, is like, I miss when you do improv. I'm like, you're the best. A friend who emails me. Someone else. I think three people.
It needed to be three. So someone else. That third mysterious individual.
Listen, here's how my brain operates. When three people say they want a thing, I'm like, everybody's talking about it on the streets.
It's the word on the street is Catherine Katie Cunty Rubin and Cassidy Jamal Jackson Warner Brown are going to do some improv.
So you get it now?
It's an overwhelming tide of demand.
All right, first we'll talk about the thing we're going to talk about, and then I'm going to try to emotionally manipulate you.
Got it. I'm in. Well, then I'm going to put up more resistance just so I can see what that emotional manipulation will look like.
Okay, that's cool.
Good.
Make me work for it.
So now you all know what the episode's going to consist of. It's going to, Katie's going to talk about her new venture. She's going to try and manipulate me into doing improv. I'm going to resist, but ultimately give in. Just spoiler alert.
You felt you needed to reiterate what we just stated?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like to lay it out as clean and clear as possible.
Okay. It's like when you're...
And fourth, we might get to a listener email.
Well, I think we should try. We'll totally get to a listener email. We're going to stretch out. Yes, we can do what we want. By the way, do you hear this?
Yep. Little chair farts.
Fuck. I'm so...
It goes away on Zoom, but I'm sure it's there on your actual recording. Because Zoom loves to repress noises that show up elsewise.
I'm wondering if Desmond can remove them, but...
Well, by all means, keep doing it as aggressively as possible.
No, but that's the problem. It's like, if I move at all, this chair does that. So maybe I need to get like an old-timey oil can and be like...
Earl can!
From The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. It's got to have a little bottom that goes dook, 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 dook.
Yes. God, what a cool prop that must have been to play with on that show. Okay, the big announcement is I put out the official GoFundMe and announced the existence of Sixth Line Studios, my theater company.
Yeah.
I
love the name being one that only people who are in on the concept will get, but it also sounds like something very like, official and
yeah
and in the know, but it sounds like an industry term and it's not,
right? It's
different industry.
Term. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be just elusive enough that it pulls you in a little, be like, what does that mean? I should know what that means. And then anybody who knows what it means is like, oh, maybe it means that. But also even human design people might see that and be like, oh, that could be a human design thing or not.
Right.
Which is great. So, yeah, I'm officially asking people for money. So exciting. And here's the thing, though, like in terms of for our audience and in terms of human design actual applicability to your life, it's such a correct Katie as a manifesting generator thing, at least for this moment, in that I have so much energy for it.
Mm.
And this is the thing we're always teaching generators. Like, I'm such the kind of teacher that is teaching things so that I hear them. Like, I mean, we've talked about that on here so many times, but like, I just have no qualms and just am so clear that like, I get to be in teaching positions because I need to hear myself say the things again and again so that I can learn them. Anyway, the thing for generators, like when they boil it down, it's like there's only three questions that are relevant for a generator in terms of making a decision. Is doing this thing satisfying for me? Do I have the energy for it? And does it make me feel more like me? And, you know, I feel like I could say like, so I'm 46 and it's taken me till 46 to be like, oh, that's the weird specific combination of things that I have energy for. It feels like me and it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
That's like when I was in my 20s and started all this shit, the healing and the being empowered and the trying to wake up nonsense. I really was like very ignorant to how long it really could take to get really like good with myself. I had like a very clueless, ignorant, impatient, fear-based timeline for how quickly I would know myself and just live my best life. You know, for the 6-2s in the audience or anybody with a 6 line anywhere, hence the name of the theater company, we don't even come off the roof till age 50. The whole thing is like drama, processing trauma, and then we at 50 start to really live. I'm not even there yet. And I'm like, wow, it's been a long ride just to get to like a sense of, oh, this is what I have energy for. And this is not what I have energy for.
Right.
And I've had to do a lot of stuff. Another thing about 6 lines is they're like the exploded out or multidimensional third line. So third line people have to trial and error, like yourself. Everything's trial and error. This works, this doesn't. And you become masters of what doesn't work because trial and error.
Yeah.
But 6 lines have a third line in them. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but I'm not sure if it's because they say, I don't know why that is. It's like 3 times 2 is 6. So I'm not really sure what the connection is with the third line, like mechanically, but they say that a 6 line is like the multidimensional third line in the sense that if you're spending age 28 to 50 processing everything before 28, it makes sense you're going to be doing some trial and error yourself because trauma sets you up to be all fucked up. So bumping along, lots of healing. Then all of a sudden like, oh, okay. And I want to be a voice for anybody listening to remember like compassionately. That's why I'm saying I was arrogant and clueless and mean to myself to think that just because I had a commitment to knowing myself and to being true to myself and doing what's really fun and satisfying doesn't mean I'm going to be good at it. Like I was committed to finding me and to healing so that I could be me and be a role model of being me, which is the 6-2's journey. But I didn't fucking do it fast.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily people have projected on me that they think I have my shit together and put me in leadership positions because, frankly, that's what my design is. I have all this leadership shit and my design's what people put me there. But did I really know me and know what mattered and have it all? No. And I just want to be a advocate for people, like, let the journey take as long as it takes, as long as the goal is true. If the goal is true and you're honest about it and you can really say to yourself, here's my honest goal and have I honestly hit it? You know what I mean? Whatever that is for you.
Yeah.
It may not be to be authentically you and live your best life, which it's been for me. But whatever it is, like, it can take 46 years or more. And believe me, knowing me now, when I'm 50, I'll be like, I didn't know anything until today. And then when I'm 55, I'll be like, thank God I'm 55. When I was 46, I knew nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of, you know, especially when it comes to like, it's only because I'm in my 50s and I still have never done anything like film career style. Right. And I love seeing like Danny Aiello didn't make his first movie until he was 52. You know, he was a bouncer at a club and now he's a big actor. You know, this, so personally, I love hearing those stories, but those are always also kind of satisfying. It's like, yeah, it's better to start early for most people, but not for everybody, because you're not ready yet. It's not there yet. I just saw a headline, and I only read a little bit of it, but this, I don't know if you've watched Ahsoka, the Star Wars series, most recent one. It was okay. Whatever, quibbles. But there's a main character on it, a woman who's like this witch character, and she's a main character on this Star Wars series, and this is like actually her first real thing. She was like, I was a mother of an autistic child and a martial artist, and then they believed in me, and now I'm the main character in this series. And she looks probably in her 50s.
Okay. Oh, you mean like she's older than that?
She's probably, I mean, I don't know how old she is, but, mm-hmm. you know, she's definitely a very late in life, you know, huge deal now, you know, huge break mm-hmm. from nothing to this.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what's her name? I always use Megan Mullally as the example. Like, she didn't get Will and Grace until she was 46 or 42 or something.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And she played like the funniest, best, wackiest character actor role that you would want to play. And like, I think of our dear best friend of the podcast, Rami, who I'm not going to say Rami's age, but Rami's murdering life right now as an actor. And Rami's not 25.
Yeah.
You know?
And didn't start until they were later, past the 25 mark. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I love that Rami made that move to New York in their not 25-year-oldness. And Rami's like booking so many jobs that 25-year-olds would love to have.
Yeah.
I give them so much credit. I just love what they're doing.
Yeah.
Everything ever too.
God, I wish I could go to Louisville.
I know.
The show looks so good.
That's
Rami's doing The Bastard in King John. Things that most, I don't know what that means, but I know it's a big deal. And every little bit of footage I've seen from like rehearsals, or they like have a trailer from the fights. Oh my God.
Yeah, I haven't seen them. They're pretty.
It looks so good.
Pretty amazing. I think too, for me, it's like, I can't tell from a picture if a thing looks good all the time, but I can tell. I mean, you can think it is.
Yeah.
And then it turns out not to be. But when Rami themselves is saying,
this is badass.
Yeah. Then I'm like, ah, fuck. I want to go to Louisville.
Yeah.
So
you could go. You don't have a commitment that you're not sure you're happy you took.
Well, except then I have to be on an airplane.
Plane.
And I'm not ready. I had like a small trauma response. So Eric is back from a trip he went on this weekend. He went to Narlands for a friend's wedding.
Is that near Louisville? Narlands.
Well, I think you just take all the consonants out of Louisville. You just go,
No. I live in Null. Is that Louisville or Nulls?
That's hard. We travel between the two cities.
On the Amtrak train.
Eric was talking about, like, he was like, oh, yeah. So, by the way, the flight from Dallas to SFO, you would not have liked. And he's just like, he's like, skips off the plane, comes home, we have dinner, we go see Danielle Levin's new amazing house in San Francisco, by the way. Jesus, shout out to her for that. Hanging out, eating food, get home. Hours later, he casually mentions, oh, yeah, you would have hated that. And I'm like, what? You're just telling me now? He's like, yeah, there was 15 minutes where it was like, oh, wow, this is really bad. Just casual, just a thing that happened in the day. And I'm just so envious of that you could just casually survive a plane experience and it not be like the thing you're dealing with for 65 hours after you've done it. One day, Cassidy, mark my words, podcast audience.
You will do it.
One day I'll be healed of that.
I was in a thing with a friend. It was a work thing, and we were celebrating someone's birthday. So a bunch of us were like at a place and eating and laughing and talking. And like, oh, and by the way, my friend has a baby. We are all just like, why is this baby not making you millions of dollars right now? It's the ultimate Gerber baby.
Oh, wow.
Every once in a while, you just meet a baby and you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
This child.
Stunning.
And then I held the baby and it put its head on my shoulder and I started crying. I was like, That's it. Oxytocin just poured into my body. Like, wow. That's not even the story I was going to tell. But okay. That was like, yeah. So we're with her for like, you know, an hour, hour and a half. And then like, she's getting ready to leave. And then she's like, oh, by the way, after I left you guys, talking to my boss the other day, I avoided being carjacked just by pure chance. And then she just told this story of like sitting in her car near her house, sort of, but like on her phone, da, 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 and then just looking up and seeing two guys in ski masks running up towards her car from behind.
Okay.
And then she just put it in gear and took off.
Wow.
Yeah. But like, she didn't go like, I'm like, lead with that. That's the first thing you're telling us. You guys, you wouldn't believe what happened.
Yeah, way to bury the lead.
Jesus.
Wow, God. This was where? In Oakland, I take it?
In Oakland, near the lake where she lives.
First, near Lake Merritt. Oakland, man. I want to have Oakland's back so bad.
Me too. There's just a lot of shit going on. It's not happy.
It's not good. So everybody's going to have to come to Danville to the theater to see all the plays we're going to produce.
Yeah.
Did I mention you could do that at sixlinestudios.com?
So let's talk more about this.
Okay. Now that I shoehorned it right in there.
No, and we needed to return to the topic.
Yeah. So there's a GoFundMe, but I want to just say this because it's the hard thing to say. So I'll just say it first to get it out of the way. There is a GoFundMe attached to every, if you're watching this or hearing this right now, look around. There's a link next to you somewhere in your vicinity to contribute to the GoFundMe. And that's to pay the actors and the set designer and the lighting people and the costume people. It takes a lot of money to put one play together.
Yeah.
So that's a so.
Especially if you want to pay people even a reasonable amount of money.
That's the thing.
Problem is, even that reasonable amount that we can usually afford to pay is like, this is pathetic.
It's not reasonable compared to most humans. And what they're making. Yeah.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of hours the last bunch of days, you know, making the video and having fun with that. It was really actually quite fun. I'm surprised. But I talk in the video about actors being athletes and they're athletes. We're athletes. We've been athletes our whole life and we're getting paid like we're what?
Not.
Not athletes. Right.
Not as much as a barista. Like we really, most of the time are not making and no disrespect to baristas. I mean that, like, this is the thing. We don't want to talk about, like, yeah, you're making more than a burger flipper. That burger flipper is making your food. Get the fuck out of here. They should also be making a living wage.
And standing on their feet all fucking day, sweating.
Right.
It's hard. It's really hard.
But and the same goes for actors. Like, we're actually busting our fucking asses so that you can be entertained. It's not a, you're an actor. That's fun. You shouldn't get paid as much.
That's right.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's not also.
It's fun and it's hard, hard physical work. And people just don't, I think it's just important we talk about it so people think about the physical labor of it. It's physical work. It's really intense, particularly stage actors. So.
And it's emotionally very taxing.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah.
Not always.
Yeah. And then everything you have to do and all the time and energy and how you have to sacrifice not doing other stuff. Everybody, all the weddings we've missed and all the jobs you can't take because you're trying to stay available for shows that might come up. And it's just like big, big sacrifice actors and designers and theater people make. And I'm not saying that for people to feel bad for us. I just want people to be educated and know the realities of what goes into it. It's like a day laborer job. Like we're people who like lift heavy bricks.
Yeah.
And we do it with an accent wearing a corset. You know, it's hard. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's emotional, it's physical. Anyway, so that's that. And I went through a whole thing. This isn't maybe interesting for us to talk about. When I was making the video where I was like, I wanted to talk on the video about, listen, I know there's a lot of shit going on in the world and people have, you know, where do you put your money? How do you, you know, it matters. I ended up cutting it just because it was going to turn into a 6-minute video and people will barely watch a 2-minute video. So, and it was already 3 minutes. So it was like, I'm going to cut this for now. And I'm going to talk about this in the ongoing promotion of the company. And I just couldn't put it in the main video because time, but it was a thing I really had to wrestle with because it feels very important to talk about. Like there's a fucking war happening. There's wars, plural, happening. And I'm like, I want to make plays. Can I have your money? And people are like, my family in Jerusalem is unsafe. No.
Right.
But also it's like, I don't know, life doesn't, me sitting around not doing life because other people's lives are threatened doesn't help those other people.
Right.
Now, me not contributing and doing nothing to support the effort or to help people also doesn't help the effort. Like, there's things I can be doing to contribute. I can put my money where my mouth is too, toward, like, I don't even know. Like, I'm thinking specifically of the Ukrainian thing when Ukraine started. Fucking Ukraine is still happening.
Yeah.
God damn it. I mean, when that started, you know, remember the thing where we were all like, people in Ukraine were like, hey, if you want to help us, but pay for Airbnbs in Ukraine,
right,
from America, because it goes right into the hands of actual Ukrainians who can't go to work because.
Yeah.
So people were like putting up like fake Airbnbs and being like, this is a fake Airbnb. I do not have an Airbnb. Please rent my Airbnb. And people were like, sure, here you go. I'll rent your Airbnb for the weekend.
Right.
Because it was a way we could give fucking money to suffering people in a direct way.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't go to like an organization that then it maybe filters down to the people. That's my question right now with this war. Like, who would it actually be?
Yeah. I mean, it's not about giving money to people right now. It's literally like the only thing is like, stop. Is that like all the effort needs is focused on, you know, please stop bombing. That's it. Like, we're not even talking about like aid yet, because the aid can't even get in. So like it's more an issue of put all of your focus and attention, not on where you put your money, but on where you put your demands to your elected officials and da 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 da. Ceasefire now, ceasefire now, ceasefire now. All sides, you know. So that's I would say, so it's kind of separate in this. That's my perception of what's going on. It's not about, oh, you shouldn't give money to Katie because you should give money to, you know, the people in Gaza who are being bombed out of their lives, because there's no, as far as I know, there's really no way to give money to that idea right now.
But that's my point, is that since at least with the Ukrainian conflict, there was a sense of we could do a thing right now.
Right.
With this, it's like, what can we do? And I see people posting ceasefire, and that's good. And you make a good point to like,
right,
letters to our Congress people. Is that who we write to?
Yeah, it's the only voice we have kind of right now, I think. And that's not even, I mean, they've heard it and only a few of them are actually saying anything. Yeah, it is about as messy and unclear. It is so tied up in financial problems and positioning and like, well, we have to.
Oil and.
Yeah, and like, you know, U.S. has to support Israel only at all costs, which is
right.
Insane.
Right.
Because, but, you know, and, but. All
wait, so when people are saying ceasefire, are they saying that to one side or the other or to both?
They're saying it when, I mean, right now the ceasefire has to only be directed at Israel, because yes, Hamas exists and did this horrible attack, but Palestine did not do this horrible attack.
Right.
Hamas did this horrible attack, but Palestine is what's being bombed into out of existence by Israel. So, but yeah, you know, someone with more knowledge is going to also argue with what I'm saying and say like, well, Israel also still has to protect itself, blah, blah, blah.
Of course.
But this sort of insanely massive slaughter bombing that's happening is
not okay.
Is what's being, say, you know, pause, hold.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
So ceasefire really has, because it's hard, we can say that to Israel because Israel is a sort of a specific government. Hamas is a sort of a government, but they're really just sort of more of a splinter group that claims control of the Gaza Strip, not even of the other part, the West Bank, which is the other part of Palestine. So it's like this very, I've just now spoken every word that I kind of understand of the situation.
Am I correct that Hamas is, or was when it first came into being, a terrorist group?
Terrorist group is just a name. That's the problem. Anything, you know,
okay.
The ANC was considered a terrorist group, the African National Congress.
Okay.
Which is ultimately what brought down, you know, so terrorist group is just a resistance framing.
Okay. So what originally when Hamas came into being, what did they want? Land ownership?
I don't stop taking our land away and making us live in open air prisons, I guess.
Okay. And they're saying that to Israel.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Hamas is Palestinian.
Yeah, Hamas is Palestinian. I mean, Israel started as a huge chunk of what used to be Palestine, and then gradually it's become more and more and more and more and pushed farther and farther and farther and farther and farther into smaller and smaller little slivers. So it's like the ultimate like man spreading, you know, they're just opening wider and wider and pushing them farther into smaller and smaller areas.
Palestine is doing that to Israel.
No, Israel's doing that to Palestine.
Okay.
Palestine has nothing left. They have like this little strip, the West Bank, and a little tiny bit of Gaza.
Okay.
Which even that has been shrunk and shrunk and shrunk as Israel sort of put settlements into areas.
I wonder how. Oh boy,
We're opening ourselves up to all the people saying, "You don't understand it. You've got it wrong, and here's why."
We both know we don't understand this, and we both have it all wrong. We acknowledge that. You don't need to tell that to us. We know. But if you do feel like sharing any information that would be useful for us to have in a non-criticizing, non-judgmental way, I would love to hear any of that. But yeah. To that end, I want to give props to my friend Adele, who lives in freaking Jerusalem right now. She lived in the Bay Area and she moved there to be with her. They have property there, her family. Adele King. I forgot her last name for a second. She's been posting some really useful, like she's like, hey, friends back in America. Here's the history. Here's who's mad at who for why. Here's the details. The problem with it is, this is not a dig on Adele, but it's a dig on me. It's posted in her stories and it's these long, 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 long paragraphs. So I have to like take a picture of the story because it goes away.
Yeah. I don't think people quite understand how stories work.
And then I have to go into my photos, save it in my photos, then expand it, make it real big. And you know, I'm complaining about that when it's like, I could also read a fucking book
right. Or
read the fucking newspaper to learn anything or Google it once. How about that?
Well, even that, where are you, who's the version of it are you reading?
Right. I know. So anyway, I give her though a lot of credit because she's at least trying to say, hey, if you don't, I get that everybody's confused. Let me help. Here's some information to have. And I keep earmarking it to go back and read it. And then I haven't. Yeah. Well, what else can I say? I think what I'd like to say out loud on this today, just to give myself some accountability, just because life is full and busy and I need accountability partners in life. I'm gonna, between now and the next time we talk, and let's check in with each other when we come back here, I'm gonna read what she posted and I'm gonna get better educated on just the basic history of who's doing what and why. And like, I just want to get caught up.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel right being as ignorant as I am. So that's my commitment for today. Stress. Yeah.
Cool. I know. Oof.
Yeah. But I'm glad we talked about it because I wanted to bring it up because it's happening and it matters. And also, as I'm, like I was saying, back to my first point, I'm busy trying to like make art.
Yeah.
You know, in my comfortable California, sitting on the water with a nice breeze life. And I'm asking people to give money so I can make art. And then you really have to wrestle with things like this. Like, should anybody's money be going? You know what I mean? It's a, and then I always come back to, it's just an Al-Anon codependency training thing where it got drilled into my head in my 20s pretty hard that like, if your mom is being toxic at you, Katie, this is what I learned, which she, you know, was a lot. And was sending me harassing emails and was manipulative. And every time it was bad. And you stop going to auditions for plays and don't teach people the things you have to teach. Like you stop living your life. Guess what? So that you can manage her and so that you can make sure everything's okay for her. So she's not mad. So you get her approval and feel okay. You're robbing the world of your life. What you would do with your life would give. Making art is a gift. We're giving to the people the art. Teaching classes, you're giving your wisdom and your insights. So you're going to shut down the outflow of what you have to give in order to manage this person who her whole aim is to harm you, unconsciously, to be fair. But her whole aim is not constructive, it's destructive. Why would you do that? That doesn't actually make any sense. And so when I look at this, it's not that the war is out to harm me, but it is that me sitting around and being upset about the war as opposed to, like, if I let that stop me from living, I do think that's not super useful. But if I go to sleep on it and do nothing to contribute, that's also not great.
Right. Yeah. The tendency is not like, guess what? I didn't go to a march. Instead, I just stayed at home. If my option was like, I'm going to go to the Beyonce concert because I have tickets. Oh, but there's a march that I should go to. But what's going to end up happening is the middle version, which is not useful to anybody. Well, I didn't go to the Beyonce concert because I felt guilty that there was a march that I should be going to. But I didn't go to the march either. I just sat home. None of those things happened. By the way, that was a theoretical construct. I did not have tickets to the Beyonce concert.
I think if you go to Beyonce and there's a march, I think that's fine and good and healthy.
That's what I'm saying. Like sitting at home did nothing.
Right. As long as we're doing something toward, if it wasn't the march, what is it that we can do? At least if we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And trying to come up with something. Even this conversation has motivated me to take the action I just committed to taking.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about it. So at least if you talk about it, you might get motivated to do something about it. But that's what I mean. We can't not go to, like you're saying, totally. Can't not go to Beyonce just because. But see, then, and now, I do get that there's privilege in that. Because if they were bombing here, you better believe we'd not be going to Beyonce.
Exactly.
But they're not bombing here, Knockwood, yet today. So we're sitting comfortably and having this choice to make, which is why I don't feel right not being educated. It's like, I have to get more educated because it's that thing of what was that slogan during the Second World War? Like, first they came for my something and I did nothing.
Right.
What is that? Do you know it?
Well, it's a whole long thing. First they came for the, you know, the artists and I did nothing. And then they came for the Jews and I did nothing. And then they came for the gypsies and I did nothing. And then they came and then there was no one left to stand for me or something.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah.
That's really real. Yeah. I think we each need to wrestle with it and come up with actions we can take that we have any power over. Which brings me to something about you, which is the show that you're involved with right now. We could say very much that one of our local theater companies here, the Aurora, is doing something in the way they know how, which is talking about the notion of Big Brother.
Yep.
In this production of 1984.
And fascism. And
fascism. And what it is when you just fall in line without thinking and trying to live up to, you know, whatever. Fascist groupthink,
yeah.
Essentially. And giving up your autonomy to fit into whatever cultural norms there are. Man, that is a...
So Katie came and saw the first preview.
Right.
And I sat with Katie and afterwards we were talking about it. And, you know, I've been sort of experiencing it all along. So I didn't really quite grasp. And then once I saw it through your eyes of like, just how unrelentingly bleak a show it is.
Yeah.
Because there's like six laughs in the whole thing. And even those are coming out of that sort of like, oh boy, the laughter of, ugh.
I guess I would offer, I'm not sure. I think eventually once certain things are tightened in terms of the technique of the performances, like when certain things are working better that you and I talked about, I think it'll be less unrelenting. I see how they built it in the writing that it was meant all the four characters around the main character. So the main character is being tortured
the whole time,
the whole show on a slab in center stage. It's not great, but played by our friend Joe O'Malley, who is incredibly talented and he does an excellent job being tortured for 2 hours. fuck. So it's a lot. But once the rhythm and the timing is tight with the actors around him, I think it really can create enough humanity, balance, levity. There's a running gag that happens too with that one character.
With the one who hates it when he talks about his dreams.
Yeah, the dreams thing.
Yeah, and that does get funnier as it goes on. It gets
funnier and funnier. And anyway, it just, the production needs to come a little further and maybe it will. And if it does.
And it definitely has. The last, even after you saw first preview and I was like, oh God, you're seeing the first preview. They were barely ready. And it was pretty good. And then it definitely is getting better every time and tightening up. And so that stuff is still there. But the sort of overall arc of the show is still one of like kind of hopelessness because
Yeah.
I mean, if you read 1984, that's the story. It's like, It's the crushing of hope. It's really a story about the crushing of hope.
It's true. And I guess the argument, there's an argument to be made for when you make a thing, a piece of art that's about the crushing of hope, it points to people about the significance of hope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean,
it's a cautionary tale, but in order to truly, it can't, some cautionary tales give you an out of like, and then the possible ending could look like this, you know, and they transcend it and they defeat the, sorry, spoiler alert, if you've read 1984, it doesn't really go his way.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, to say the least.
But doing theater, there's another, that ties this bow all right back up. We are still doing theater with a point. And laughter and joy is also a point to bring levity, laughter, and joy into, like, you can do just a raucous comedy, and it still fucking matters. It
matters a lot. I mean, what do people do when they've been trying to help with the war all week and they need a minute? It's like, go see a play that makes you laugh. But what I do want to give props to the Aurora for doing really challenging theater in a moment that's challenging on Earth, because they're talking about fascism and how it's just,
yeah,
the play is talking about that.
Yeah.
It's all about Big Brother and it's happening in our world. So I give them credit for talking about it. I also am like, God, everybody's trying to stay alive right now as a theater. And I'm like, I don't know if you.
Why are you starting a theater company in the middle of all of them closing?
Oh, no, not that. But thank you.
Sorry.
No, not that. I'm saying if they're trying to stay open, that's a rough one to choose.
True. It is technically their holiday show. Everybody else is doing fucking Christmas Carol and they're doing 1984.
I mean, I guess you could say they're offering the balance to what else is happening at this time theatrically. Like in town, nobody else is doing, it gets real light and fun around the holidays.
Yeah.
It doesn't, and theatrically. So maybe they're like, hey, we're presenting a counterpoint.
Well, and on that, Michael Jean Sullivan, who is the playwright who adapted this 1984, who is also a major force at the San Francisco Mime Troupe, who only does this sort of thing all the time, nonstop. That's all they ever do. But they do it in the form of musical comedy. And they do social critique in the form of musical comedy. That is their deal. But he has been, he tried really hard to raise enough money to do this production of A Red Carol. He has an adaptation of A Christmas Carol that's a total, like, Tommy Pinko version of A Christmas Carol. That's really great. I've done a reading of it. It's really fun. And he was trying to raise enough money to do a full production of it this year. And he just didn't quite make it, which is a bummer. But, you know, that's the perfect blend. He's like, oh, we'll do A Christmas Carol. Here we go. You know, and, you know, weirdly, Christmas Carol is also a, like, it is a critique. It's a social fabric. It's a critique of social fabric.
It sure is.
Even though it's the happy do-do-do, it's gonna do Christmas Carol around the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the thing. I think that's what, I mean, maybe that's why a lot of theaters still bother with it, is because it's not just, look, Santa's here. It's like a story about capitalism and what it can do to your heart.
Yeah.
How it can kill you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that topic, you are raising money specifically to do one production to start, to launch your production.
Yeah.
And it is one with absolutely relevant. It is a fucking hilarious comedy, but it is about the absurdity of political what?
Well, I haven't said it officially.
Oh, what play you're doing.
Yeah, because I was going to wait. Like the first wave is like, hi, I'm a theater company. Could I have some money? And then the second wave is, hi, we're doing this play with this person. Could I have some money? Then the third wave is like, hi, I'm a theater company and we're doing this person's play with this. Can I have money? So like, I'm trying to,
all right,
trying to like
slow roll,
have a strategy. But that being said,
I didn't say it out loud. We didn't say it all.
No, but Cass, you're fine because we already talked about it on here. Remember, for a couple of weeks, I've been like, what shows should I do? And should I do?
Oh, okay.
And then, so I already burst my own bubble.
Yeah.
So I'm just now, as you said that, I'm like, oh boy, now I'm torn because I'm trying this weird tactic thing, but also I don't really care and would like to talk with you about it right now.
That's all right.
But yeah, it is. It's a satire. It's a comedic satire, exactly to your point, about, I think it's kind of about political figures and the, you know, it's more about, if it's more an allegory about a Trump figure than it is about like a war or anything. It's about how we get caught up in the personality of a political figure, and they can say the most insane shit. And how fucking Peter wrote this pre-fucking Trump.
way before Trump. He wrote it about more about like Sarah Palin and the other people like that of the previous era, where it was like the first time we were like, wait a minute, how is this the person that is being put forward?
Yeah.
Even like, because even, I mean, we thought that about W, like, God, he's dumb. How is he a political figure?
Right.
Prior to that, you had a lot of people who weren't dumb. They were just
crazy.
They had beliefs I didn't agree with, but they were political machines.
Right.
And then you started to get to this place of like, wait, this person isn't even a political machine. They're just a nut job saying the most bizarre things. And then Trump just became the even more absurd version of that. But we'd already gotten absurd before him, and then he just made it more absurd. And then I feel like Marjorie Taylor Greene and the other one, Lauren Boebert, are the even weirder versions of Trump. They're the even more bizarre versions of Trump.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. So when Peter Sinnottrieb wrote this play called, well, let's talk about it. It's called The Totalitarians. In 2016, right? I mean, it was beyond
Tea Party time. Yeah.
Right. And it was beyond prescient. It was like incredibly on point. So we talked about on here how I was thinking about, maybe it was on here, maybe not, but I've been chatting with somebody about how as I'm rereading it, it's like, do we need any updates to it? Does it need any updates? And so I met with Peter this week, as I was telling you, and he and I were talking about that. I was like, do you think there's anything that's, and he was like, we both sat there and we both were like, I don't actually think so. And he's like, when you're in production, if there's anything in there that's like referencing something from the 2016s, let me know and I'll change it. And I'm like, okay, great. But as we scanned it together, we kind of looked through the thing and just went, there's just nothing, which is shocking.
Yeah. It's so weird. I mean, that's here's the other reason that like artists are important, you know?
Yeah.
They're seers often, you know, that the play I did, the Tea Party,
yeah,
thought it was sci-fi when they first wrote it. And so no one would produce it. And it just got more and more and more and more and more and more real.
Yeah. When did you do that and where?
That was the one I did earlier this year at the...
Oh, that one.
That one, mm-hmm. With Aaron Merritt directing it. And he wrote it like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was about this sort of, you know, growing divide between the right and left and how kind of insane it could get and how people would do things, and we could have a civil war. And then, you know, then we had a fucking insurrection at January 6th, you know, like, oh, we almost did have a civil war and we kind of still do a little bit. And like,
and we still could at any moment.
Yeah.
What do you think about this whole, like, I mean, I don't know if you have an opinion about this, but like, what's your sense of like, Trump could go to jail or be president?
I think you just said it. The haltingness in your voice said it all. Trump could go to jail or be president. That's the moment we're in.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a dumb question again, like an ignorance revealing question. Just like, so if he gets arrested, he can't still run, right?
That's not true.
Okay.
Unless, as far as I know, and of course, there's been a billion think pieces written about this, and this depends on which constitutional scholar you're referring to. There is a piece of the Constitution that says you may not hold elected office if you are guilty of treason, sedition, insurrection.
All right.
So if something that he is sentenced for or found guilty of is one of those things, then that's it. He can't do it. But if he's even found guilty of like fraud,
rape, and
which one of his, yeah, fraud and rape and those other things, he supposedly could still even be in prison and be elected president.
Okay, wait. So that's he's found guilty for X, Y, or Z, but what if he's literally incarcerated?
That I don't know.
For the other things, not the things that would eliminate him. Like, if he can he run the country from...
That's the question. Can he rule from prison?
Also, is there any world in which, in reality, he goes to a jail? Like,
right.
Like, we saw Jeffrey Epstein go to jail and die. But Trump? Like, Jeffrey Epstein, nobody thought he'd go because he did a lot of, like, what's that called? Home jail? What's it called?
Home jail.
Where you have like a thing on your foot.
House arrest.
House arrest. And did a lot of quote, quote, jail time from his palace or whatever. But the fact that he got actually taken down and put in physical jail.
Yeah.
That's like the only hope I have to believe that we could maybe actually put Trump in a cell. But I mean, talk about political power to get out of a thing. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, I guess. That's the point.
And then, yeah, there's always, is he allowed to pardon himself? He can pardon anybody else, but can he pardon himself? He says he can. He already says he can.
Of course he says.
Said it last time.
Right.
But he likes to make up rules. But also, what are rules? Apparently, rules don't matter either that much. They kind of do and they kind of don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I'm trying to ask, and I you and I are the wrong people to ask, but like, is, does anybody know? Does anybody know the answers to the things I'm asking? I'm not even asking you to have the answers. I'm just going, do people know if it's a thing that you can go to jail and run the country from jail? Does anybody know that? Like, is that a thing? But I guess I don't know that we can know if anybody knows.
No.
God, it'd be really fucking, I mean, it'd be like, talk about next level surrealism if he's running the country from prison.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
I wonder what that would actually mean. Would it mean that other people are running it and he's a figurehead? Or would it mean, like, could he actually do anything? How would he sign anything? Like, you know, just practically, if you're in a cell.
Or he's on house arrest at the White House.
God, what the fuck? I also feel like, man, this is such a, we're laying ourselves so bare for like foreign adversaries to be like, okay, so their president's in jail. Let's go ahead and bomb them now because yeah, they're all fucked up. That's the reason you don't want a civil war, I think, if you're America, is because,
well, that's, yeah, that was the premise of the second half of Tea Party, is we're in a civil war and we're kind of over it a little bit, but we're recovering. And then all the other companies, all the companies, that's Freudian slip, but all the other countries come in and just pillage us financially. They're like, great, we're going to come and take all your timber, and these guys are going to buy up all the art, and these guys are going to come in and, you know, because we have no infrastructure to protect us anymore.
But, or even worse, we're just going to bomb the fuck out of you and take the whole thing over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're Russia or China and you want to go fucking crazy.
Yeah.
When Trump is in prison running the country, it might be that'd be the time to do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got a letter from a listener.
Do you have to end right at 11 yourself? Because you probably have another client. I'm just.
Yes.
Great. So I'm just saying, we might not get to improv game today. We might.
All right.
But
we'll do listener and then we'll do improv if there's time.
All right. Bup.
Hey, what's up? It's Rami. Here in Louisville, Kentucky, deep in tech rehearsals for this show. Today, I went to the barber to get my hair cut. It's been a minute. I haven't gotten my hair cut since I left New York. And I went to the barber who cut my hair here in 2017. So I was here at this theater, Actors Theater of Louisville, and I did Angels in America in 2017. I played the angel. And when I arrived in Louisville, I had a kind of like a moppy afro, and the costume designer had a meeting with me and was like, so I was thinking about something like this. And she had prepared 3 pages of photos of haircuts, mood boards, you know, of what she was thinking for my hair and the images that she liked. And they were pretty much all mohawks with fades. And, you know, there was some line art and stuff. And she was like, so what do you think? And I was like, great. And she's like, okay, so do you want to think about it for a while? And I was like, nope. She was like, okay, so if you decide you want to do it, let me know. I was like, no, I'm good. She's like, okay, so do you think you might want to? And I'm like, yep. Anyway, we had this long conversation where she could not, she was not prepared for my casual and immediate yes on, you know, being asked if I was willing to have my hair cut into a mohawk. Anyway, so then she took me and her mood boards to this barbershop, Big City Styles, and the barber whose shop it was, Julius, is master barber. He's delightful. And there are several barber chairs in the shop, but there's one that is like basically on a, this raised level in the window, like you're on display while you get your hair cut. And that's his chair. And he likes to cut people's hair in the window and have it be this like, yeah, presentation kind of from the street. So that's where I got my hair cut. And I have photos to prove it. And I've been rocking that. I've been rocking a version of that cut ever since. And he was so excited at the time because he didn't usually get to do anything kind of artistic. He mostly was just lining people up or whatever. So he was thrilled to do it. And it was, he had all these visions too, you know, so there were the mood boards, there was his artistic eye, everything. And he cut my hair. So it was a mohawk with a fade, and the top of the hair was not even, it was not symmetrical. It was like at an angle, like Gumby, like a wedge. It was cool. And it had two lines on one side. It was a great cut. And anyway, so today before my tech rehearsal, I scooter over to the barbershop. I walk in and there he is cutting somebody's hair in that barber chair in the window. And he's like, hello, welcome to, wait a minute, I remember you. And I was like, you remember me from 2017? He was like, yeah. It was really, really sweet. So there it is. A nice little moment of memory. Yeah, Rami's rules.
Okay, I'll try and read it quickly. It's kind of a long letter, but it's a good letter. Hey, Katie and Michael, I wanted to first say thank you for the very interesting content that you put on the podcast. I have enjoyed it a lot after finding Katie and her weekly three-card spreads on Instagram. So he came to us through your Instagram.
Okay, great. Spreads. That's great.
So interesting bit of angle. So my question stems from Katie's knowledge of the Akashic records and how they may pertain to my situation. Recently, I've been contacted by multiple people on the social media wanting to do readings for me. Each has mentioned a, quote, curse placed on me by a family member at birth that has kept me from reaching success. One such, quote, priestess offered a cleanse that I agreed upon. But each time she came back to me, it seemed all she was doing was asking for more money to buy materials. I politely said I was not interested in continuing, and this upset her. I mentioned that I didn't think her spells had worked, which upset her even more. She mentioned something about the ancestors being upset and placing a curse on my children. I wished her well and promptly blocked her. Yesterday, I was contacted by someone with a different name using very much the same language, verbiage, and information, mentioning a curse toward my children another priestess had placed on them. It's the same person. Come on.
Or, yeah, but it's also a tactic that all these people use. Go ahead.
Yeah. This all sounded very similar to the first person, so I politely declined. So after that long intro, my question is, how can I tell if there really has been a curse placed on me and my kids? And if so, how can I get rid of it legitimately without using one of these spiritual whimsy witches of IG? Thank you again for all you do. Sending you peace, love, and light. I'm going to leave this person's name off. We will say it when we want to talk about it, but we will beep it out.
I have answers. First of all, no, there's no curse on you. It's just I'm tapping in as you're talking to this person's energy. Is there a curse? No. Secondly, this is what... God damn these fucking people who do this nonsense. I get a couple a day of these because my assistant and I one thing she does regularly is follow spiritual people on Instagram so that people who follow them will see my stuff and, you know.
Got it.
So spiritual people, quote, some of them are fucking terrible fraud monsters. And they're not healers at all. And they're not what they say they are. Other people are what they say they are and use these tactics to manipulate people into paying them for their talents. Like, you might actually have talent and ability to read or whatever. And then you don't trust that you can just be like, hi, I do this. Come check it out. So you manipulate people emotionally into feeling like they should get a reading with you. I'm not kidding, 6 a day. And they're all the same. It starts with, hi, beloved, you have a beautiful aura around you. It's really nice looking at your aura. I do see you're struggling with X, Y, or Z, and they pick a thing. Would you like me to read for you? I could read for you about it. How's tomorrow? And they just like get pushy. They claim to see a thing about you. They claim to know a thing about you that you need to know. And if you don't know, you're not going to. So it's using fear to manipulate people into paying them. I think that's fucked up. So whether this person was, let's say they were legit, right? The fact that they came at you that way is 100% of a reason to immediately ignore them, take nothing they say seriously because they are untrustworthy. Now, I understand your fear though, and your concern that you're like, well, if 2 of them came at me, maybe there is something. So I'm sincerely psychically tapping into you and I get a no. And I promise you, if there were a yes, I would open your records and we would do some clearing. There's not.
Speaking from a person who has not dealt with the spiritual fraud, but gets fraudulent texts all the time, I think another big hint was similar language. Like, when you see 2 things with similar language from 2 different places, nope, neither of them is valid. Like, that's it. Like, they just, you answer your own questions sometimes just by seeing that. And, you know, the thing to look out for, I watch a lot of things about hustlers and scam artists, spiritual or not. You know, that's a big part of my life, is that information that feels like a really insightful cold read, but when you inspect it, was found out, you know, you can really realize that actually wasn't about me, or they, you know, Googled me for 15 seconds and they realized that I lived in Birmingham and now they can go in on the Birmingham thing.
Well, right. Or like in this person's case, the writer who wrote into us, and thank you for the question, because this is relevant for a lot of people. You have to remember what anybody trying to scam you, or even if they're not total scammers, they're just being emotionally manipulative, which is also fucked up. Anybody trying to emotionally manipulate you knows that most humans have some kind of challenge going on in their family at all times. So if you
and probably know someone named John who died.
So if you say to any human, hey, I see this thing on your family and it's an ancestral curse and that's why it's happening, you and that person who you say it to is afraid already about what's going on with their family, they're doing that to push your fear button. And that's, so it's just, I'm saying that for all of us to remember the way that emotionally manipulative people operate is they push a fear button based on a thing that is likely a fear that you have. And it's likely you got something going on in your family. You know why? Because you're a human and everybody has shit going on in their family. And everybody wants an answer to why. I'm just so mad at these people because they really give, you know, legit healers a bad name. And this is why people don't listen to spiritual people, because there's a bunch of fraudulent, toxic fuckwads out there doing nonsense like this to innocent humans. It's fucked up.
The question I'm going to ask you is not, it could sound accusatory and it's not, it's actually an opportunity to differentiate. And that is, what is the difference between, say, you having someone that maybe you did a reading for here on the podcast, free and easy, but then you're like, you know what? You need to come and do a session with me, which is you saying, I am now selling you my services, right? And that there is a difference between that, and it could even be a slightly hard sell where you're like, no, you really do need to come to me.
Yeah.
Like, where for you is the line of?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, what I always say here, I try anyway, is, first of all, notice I don't say that to everyone who comes on.
Yeah.
I'm not just willy-nilly saying,
here's a chance to get a new client.
You should come to me because you're not doing well. This is where it's tricky. People have to trust their healer. So if I don't have a high level of integrity where I'm not actually checking with consciousness and being like if I ever say, I think you could use a healing session, it's because that's what I'm getting psychically from consciousness. And that's what I'm intuiting by feeling into the heaviness that they're carrying. So that's where it's just my professional opinion that I think that person could use a session. I then stop talking. I don't then go, so you're not going to be okay. And you should be really worried about it. And this is a real problem. And don't you feel afraid? And let me poke your fear. That would be manipulative. If I say,
yeah, that's the one, like the cults that take you into the side room and go, why aren't you ready to invest right now in your future?
What I do want to own, because you ask a great question, built into what I'm doing on this podcast and built into what I'm doing on the internet, built into everything I'm doing is the implication and the suggestion that I have access to information you don't have access to. And that is problematic and challenging. In other words, I'm saying I have these abilities, right, that allow me to feel into you and bring light into your pain. And you don't have that ability. And without me, you can't do it. So,
oh, sounds like Christianity.
So I make a point of saying, if you go back and listen to any time I've said this hundreds of times on here, do it with me, do it with someone else, just do it.
Mm.
There are plenty of healers who can help you move this. I'm not the only one. I would suggest whether you do it with me or do it with someone else, just have it done. Because I actually personally care about people being well, and they're carrying something heavy. I want them to get it healed. Now, I think the reason I say that all the time is because of this exact thing, because I'm so aware of the power I have over people when they're in a vulnerable position. You know how many people I went to in the depths of my, and anytime you're in a vulnerable position and you go to someone like, I'm all fucked up, help. That person has all kinds of power to manipulate you in that moment. Or not.
That's scary.
It is scary. That's why I think I'm glad you asked the question. I'm not afraid of the question. And it's why I also say every time, do it with me. There's plenty of people who could do it. Do it somewhere else. Maybe do what you do, but deal with this. Come get a session if you want, or don't. But this is what you're dealing with. I wrestle with this a lot because I think my job as a healer is to empower people to be who they are and trust their own inner knowing. That's why I lean these days so heavily on human design. Because human design says, if you follow your strategy and authority, not Katie Rubin, don't follow me. I'm one manifesting generator with emotional authority. I do what I do. What do? You might be a projector with no authority. You better not do what I do. That's not going to work for you. So that's why I lean on the human design. It's like, please come to know yourself. I think my job is to heal people, help them decondition out of what is not them and become more of who they really are. So but because I do have the ability to see some stuff, I am in a position of power. And so I have to be very ethical about how I use it. Does that make sense?
100%.
So what is the difference between the two? One is that person is telling a person they have power. Hey, I see this thing around you. It's ancestral pain. B, poking at their fear and then using their fear to manipulate them into having a session. I am publicly saying, I have this ability. You could come and try it. If you don't want to, don't. And the end.
Yeah, that free will thing is big. And the don't, also ideas of like, don't, you have to do it right now. Make a decision. What are you doing?
Yep.
This is vaguely relevant, but I'm just going to share it as it's sales. Sales is can be a problem. Anything.
Yep.
But it's necessary to keep your business going. You have to sell your product, but you also, there's that fine line.
I know.
I was thinking about changing phone services, and I called up a phone service, a cell phone service, and I asked, like, I laid out, they were like, they're help. Oh, what do you need? What kind of thing do you want? And she asked me multiple times, if we get cut off, can I call you back at this number? And I said, yes.
Okay.
So she was just confirming my phone number. Not multiple, but like twice. She was like, is this the phone number to call you back at if we get cut off? I was like, great. So I knew she had the ability to call me back. And we got to the point where, you know, she told me which plan she thought I should get. And I was like, great. Can you email that to me? Because I'm, you know, I'm just gathering information right now. Oh, well, let's do it right now. Let's just make the change. I was like, I'm not going to do that today. I'm gathering information. I'm going to say the same phrase again.
Right.
Just gathering information. And this is the one that pissed me off when she asked, why aren't you ready to do it right now?
Ew.
Then I was like, A, fuck you. I'm not going to answer that.
Yep.
B, I am going to answer that, actually. And that's, I'm going to repeat myself. I am not going to do this right now. I would like to have this information
right.
so that I can compare it and discuss it with my partner because it's their phone line as well. Well, can we get them on the phone right now? God,
she can jump off a building.
And then when I said a third time it wasn't going to happen, I realized I was talking to a dead line.
She hung up?
When I said, you know, I was talking for a few minutes or for like 30 seconds saying, look, I'm gathering information. This sounds like a good possibility. And I looked at my phone. I realized I've been talking to a dead line.
Wow.
And then I was like, well, we got cut off. Waited a minute, no call back, you know, and I knew she had the ability to call me back. So she hung up on me.
Wow. What was the thing she was selling?
Just a reasonable plan on a known, it was not like some niche, weird company. It was one of the major cell phone carriers.
Okay.
It was just a cell phone plan. But like when she realized she wasn't going to get what she wanted from me, she hung up on me. But that part was just rude. And it doesn't mean I'm not going to go with that company. I'll just talk to someone else and be like, that person was an asshole, by the way. But the point being that question, why aren't you ready to do this right now? That pisses me off because I've heard that. I've absolutely 100% heard that from people who went to like Landmark Forum and then got taken into the side room and like, okay, pay $300 right now for this course and then $1,000. No, why aren't you ready to fix yourself right now? And I feel like that's what this person's doing.
Yeah, they're shaming you into they're using shame to, and judgment to make you feel bad about your quote unquote unwillingness to face your stuff as a way to get them to pay you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not okay.
And this person needed their commission probably.
Yeah, definitely for sure. It's hard. Like, I'll give you an example, too. Anybody listening here knows that I put out reduced price healing specials regularly and that when I put them out, you have to book by a certain day and then the special ends. And that is designed to push people into making a choice. Like, I do that.
Yeah.
That's just like marketing sales 101 but in my mind, I'm also not like calling people up and being like, there's demons around you. You have until Friday to get my discounted price to get rid of your demons. I hope what I'm doing is providing constant, what is this called? Content that illustrates my actual care and actual ability to do good for humans. And then when I offer a discount, it's to push people who are sitting there thinking about it. And they're like, I don't know if I can afford that. I don't know if I want to risk it for that rate, or I've got this real problem, but I can't afford Katie. If I give a reduced price thing and I say book by Friday, it's to push people who are already like, I want to do that. But and then I go, you can do it now. It's cheaper. And then they do it. And then what happens is they get hooked on the results they get. They feel better.
Right.
If they're just getting hooked on my manipulation and hooking them, then I'm not doing a service. But if what they get hooked on is, oh, wait, this works and it's helping my life.
Right.
That's how, for me, it feels ethical to say like, hey, I have a sale and it ends on this day. You've already been thinking about this. Let me help you choose it so you can feel better sooner.
Right.
I actually believe that. Now, how does anyone out there know I'm not just a scammer fraud doing the same thing we're talking about? I guess you don't until you try it.
Well, and if they're following you, they do know that it is actually a period of time. Every once in a while, for a period of time, you lower your rates for a brief period of time in order to give people an opportunity to get in on it. Whereas there's a lot of, like, you know, stores that always have the sign going out of business sale on it. That's a lie. Yours is actually a temporary reduction in price. That's it. That's what it is.
Yeah. I sigh because I'm like, this is like the built-in problem of this whole field that I'm a part of. I'm going to say this thing. I wasn't going to say it, but.
Well, you're not a shaman in a village where you're just providing a service in order to, because that's your function in the society. You're operating within a framework in which you have to make money to continue to live.
Right. Capitalism is fucked for all of us. I've been in the middle of a thing with, I'm going to disguise this as much as I can. Some people I've known are having a problem with a healer person that they know, that I also know. No one that we've talked about or whatever here, but I'm hearing from several directions that this healer is doing these manipulative, emotional, pressuring techniques with their own clients. But not only that, they're doing a lot of shady stuff where they're going to other healers' online group things, learning secret stuff about clients that the clients share in the privacy of that safe, sacred space circle, and then messaging them privately and saying, psychic.
Ooh.
Psychically, I'm getting this thing about you, but it's they learned it in the other person's group.
Wow.
And that's not okay. Also, they're doing things where like the person is crying and thinking about whether to book sessions or whatever. And this healer person is saying to them, I'm really getting that you need to be working with me. And the person is in their most vulnerable place ever. And that person, the vulnerable person, came to me and said, I felt really pressured and manipulated. And then I said, yes. And then afterwards, I did the thing, didn't get anything out of it. I was wishing I had spent money to work with you because I always get something out of sessions with you. And I was like, okay, I'm in a delicate moment here. First thing I want to say to you is you've got to do what feels right to you. Don't come see me because I'm here and saying I can help you. Come see me if you want to come see me. Now, what I also want to say is that's not okay what that person's doing to you, that you are being gaslit and manipulated.
Yeah.
And your feelings are right. Like my whole job with that person was just to validate you're not crazy. You are being pressured and manipulated into doing this thing. So it's such a tightrope. And I'm really glad we're talking about it because what's a metaphor that would work? I feel like I'm a person with a big, what's that knife called? The kind of sword?
Machete?
No, it's of that world, but that like a, not a pirate has, it's like, it's shaped like, it gets wider.
A cutlass?
Maybe a cutlass. Like I have a big, heavy metal sword and I'm a tall lady. I'm like an Amazonian Kali goddess person who could fuck you up. And I'm in a world full of injured babies. And I could just...
Wow. This image is going somewhere.
Well, but this is my point. I could just swipe my cutlass and everybody would be all fucked up. And it's that easy because everybody's that vulnerable and that suffering and it matters that much. So the way I try and hope I'm wielding the cutlass is I put it in its sheath behind my back. And I have to stay big energetically to do what I do, but I can't be so big that it scares people and they're unsafe. And I can't misuse the bigness. I just have to stand here and be big and go like, if there's demons and entities and past life shit and trauma you want to clear, I can do it. Look how big I am. And then if people come, then I have to carefully, slowly take the cutlass out of its leather sheath and cut away the bad stuff around them and in their heart and do all the things I do without harming them with the cutlass.
I think the word you were looking for is scimitar.
Great.
I haven't been listening to anything you said because I'm just joking. I 100% listened to all of it. But then the image was so evocative.
What about
that it finally popped as to what it was.
What about a scythe or a sickle?
Also, that would be like the thing at the end of a stick with a curved blade.
Yeah, that's not the one.
Like that death carries around.
Yeah, I hear you. I think, I don't know what a scimitar is.
It looks like a cutlass, probably. It's...
what's the word for like the metal thing they bring tea in? It's the name, like, it's not scimitar, but it's something like...
No, that's a samovar. I'm like, I have this giant samovar. It's full of boiling hot water. And if I move too abruptly, boiling water will fall all over the room full of babies.
Every time I hear scimitar, I think of a samovar. And then every time I see samovar, I think of a... You get it.
I had one more question for you about this, and then we probably have to wrap up.
Yes.
Do you feel like... I mean, because it's such a delicate tightrope, I feel like I'm interviewing Katie today, and that's great. I love it. Do you feel like you've ever stumbled or...
Yes.
You know, bullied somebody a little bit too much or yes. Been to something?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would be such a liar if I said no.
Yeah.
What would happen in the beginning a lot was, it's sort of like I discovered that I was pressuring people who were in a vulnerable position. The MO inside me was... I know I can help you and you're in resistance, but because they were vulnerable in that time in their lives, any kind of pressure at all start. And because you're paying me, because you're going to pay me money,
yeah.
it's too messy. It's too, because it becomes about the money, whether my MO is about the money or not. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, in other words, if I'm like, I don't know, it's something that I watched myself do a lot of times because I was like, no, you don't get it. I can really help you. This is different than what you've been through. Let's do this. Commit now and I can help you. We're going to clear those entities. This was like very much how I operated in the.
But that commit now thing is the thing that just gets very fucking dicey.
It's not cool. It's not cool. So now that's why I'm very second liney about it. I'm like, hey, if they say to me, this is what happens now. People say to me, well, what do we do next? Or what should we have one session or something? They go, well, now what do I do? And I go, well, I think this, and this is going on. If you're working with me, I would suggest get a package, commit, and let's go. When you're ready and when you're able, don't rush, but as you're able, that's what I would suggest. Another option you have is, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem from my perspective. Take that to your healer or your acupuncturist or whoever you work with and give them that information. And if it jives with what you're already doing with your people, do that. But so my point is, if they ask me, they're asking me, and then I'm allowed to share right. what I see, what my perception is. But if they don't ask me, I don't think it's really my place, unless I'm in the records and consciousness is like, this person needs a session with you. Then I'm like, well, fuck.
Right.
So I'll go, all right, look, I think we should have a session. Let's do that. And if you have somebody else you work with, please go work with that person. But this is what I'm getting. Listen to every episode of this and you'll see that's what I do. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I think this is a really important one because we're in a, you know, I mean, the same shit happens in, you know, medical worlds as well. But like this idea of like, how do we know when it's the right thing or we're being taken for a ride or it is the right thing, but we're still being pressured and that's okay, but maybe not always. And like, yeah, it's a stinky place. There's a lot of pitfalls.
It's hard too for healers that are starting out because you know you can actually do some good. And if you don't tell people, they don't know you exist. So you have to tell people and you have to put a little like, okay, so I'm good at this. So here's how you do it. And here's where you book. Otherwise, nobody books. And then you have no income and you have no life.
Yeah.
So I don't have it perfectly dialed in at all. I just trust my own abilities. I trust my own integrity. If I'm out of alignment with a client, I have a conversation and go, I'm really sorry. And I can't tell you how many times I've done that. Like, I'm so sorry. I was so pushy with you. Where I fuck up a lot, let's own current day fuck ups. In class, sometimes I'll get on a roll. Some people are real open and then I'm like, oh, I see this and I see that and let's move this and move that. And then the fourth person who talks in class, let's say, is shy, is not ready to be pushed, is terrified to be in a class. And I'm like, cool. So it's this, that, you need this, that. Okay, go. And then they're like, and they feel pressured by me. And it's because, and I'm being pushy because I've been in a role with everybody who knows me well and is already like, okay, cool. Okay, got it. Here we go. Bing, bing, bing. And so I have to watch like that sort of manifesting generator energy wave I can get on of like, cool, we're on it. Let's go. Everybody's healing. And I have to read the energy better and be like, hey, I'm not going to push you today because you're clearly vulnerable and let me back the fuck off. And that's been my practice the last like 2 years, I'd say, is like really trying to come at everybody differently.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's hard. I'm not perfect.
All right. Human. You're human.
I'm a human person. I'm failing and stuff. SixLineStudios.com. Come see a play. It's going to be great.
You're doing your work. Is the website up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fancy. Check it out.
All right. I'm going to go. I love you so much, Katie. This was a fun conversation today. I really appreciate you. Go heal somebody. I think that's what you're about to do. Oh, do your work. Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod, @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. go to whatsoundsawesome.com.